Good evening. This is the Committee on Health, Human Services, and Housing. We're reconvening and beginning and continuing our discussion of Senate File 1. And we were taking questions from Senate members.
And Madam Chair, I'm almost done with my, I think this might be my last active purchaser question. So Senator Lori, what happens in the active purchaser situation where a plan is selected and my doctor's not in it? In
Chair, Senator Benson.
Senator Lori, if a plan is selected to be in the exchange and I qualify for the subsidy and there are limited choices and my doctor's not in that plan, not in that network, what happens?
Senator Lori?
They have to find another plan within the exchange. I mean, if the plan that you're interested in is selected in, but it doesn't cover, but your doctor isn't part of that network, so I'm not sure that that's an active purchaser question. Maybe I'm missing something.
Let me, Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Lori, what if in the active purchaser model, I know there's going to be a couple of multi-state plans that will be qualified. What if the board only chooses one other plan and my doctor's not in any of those three options? Then what do I do?
Senator Lori.
Madam Chair, Senator Benson. Network adequacy is one of the pieces that's going to be in the basic minimum criteria. If you look at the selection criteria that are going to be used for year one, quality and sufficiency of the health plan providers' networks is, one of the criteria. We're trying to get to a place where there's broad network adequacy. If a plan product is put out on the market that doesn't meet the basic core needs of individuals, the exchange has the authority to not allow it access to the market. The market rules regarding network adequacy are going to be addressed in another bill that's coming. One of the things that people have asked me for many times is to put market rules provisions in this bill, which would be problematic because we just really wouldn't be able to meet the March deadline and do a decent enough job talking through this type of issue. How do we make sure that the networks are adequate and that the choice and selection is there? But in order to make sure that doctor choice is available, I think it's a bit of a false dichotomy to say that either doctor choice or active purchaser. I don't see these two as competing against each other. And we're going to have a market rule bill following this one, and we're going to get that over here to the legislature as soon as possible to really put some framework and some bounds around that and begin to understand it in much greater depth, but it's not really covered in this bill.
Okay, Madam Chair and
Senator Benson.
Senator Lori, when are we going to get some you're saying the bill hasn't been introduced yet?
No. There was out of the task force and the adverse selection work group forwarded it up to the Health Insurance Exchange Task Force, a strong recommendation that we adopt same market rules inside and outside of the exchange. that's a baseline there. What we requested of the Department of Commerce and the Department of Health last year was a report on market rules that's due to the legislature by February 15th. I've been having a hard time managing all of these issues that are very serious issues, and people have continually come to me and tried to get market rules provisions added to this bill, And I've said, you know what, we just can't. We can't get through the entire market rules conversation within the March timeline that this nuts and bolts core functioning needs to be done. And so what I've done is I've risen the importance of that and really pushed the administration to come out with what their proposal is, what they think it should be, get that over here, get it before the legislature in a much quicker time frame, and try to really elevate that conversation, because they are really important issues for how this thing is going to function. But this bill doesn't really delve deeply into the market rules. I'm doing all I can to speed that up and get it here before us, hopefully very, very soon. But it has not been released from the administration at this point.
And thank you,
Senator Benson.
Madam Chair and Senator Lori, we don't need another let's pass the bill so we can find out what's in its scenario. And so I appreciate that you're rushing that. It just leaves a great deal of discomfort, because right now this thing feels like a magic box where we have all this policy that's going to go in. This board is going to shake it up and decide what comes out the other side. And I know the board isn't the purview of this committee, but I don't see the legislature holding on to a lot of control in this board. I don't see the governor having the authority to remove a board member. I don't see anything about audits. And so I'm very concerned that we're building a magic box, that we're just supposed to trust things are going to come out. And so I hope we'll tighten things up as we go forward. And you have always worked earnestly and very straightforwardly, but the second bill has now become quite worrisome.
Yep.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Nelson, I'm sorry if I cut you off earlier and you hadn't completed your questions, but you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Lori, I am still trying to understand why this active purchaser model is something that is being pursued here. What I did understand from our testimony earlier this afternoon, from your testimony, was that the qualified health plans will have certain parameters, but not every plan that is a qualified health plan will be allowed in the exchange. And it's up to this 7-person board to determine which of those QHPs are in the exchange. And I'm trying to understand why that is necessary. And I thought I heard you say because the goal is to increase value, but I don't understand how that is going to increase value. And so I'd like you to address that a little bit more for me, please.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, certainly.
Senator Lori.
And, you know, they are, it takes several tries oftentimes, and we go through it in my office a lot with a lot of different groups. One thing, I guess, qualified health plan is a term of art, and I think that qualified health plan is once you've met both prong one and prong two. So let's just say prong one is really akin to the Department of Commerce bare rules for participation in the marketplace at all. Prong two is where the exchange, through rules in years two and forward, promulgates the criteria that they're looking for, including the measurements by which the criteria will be viewed to see if they've been met, and puts the carriers on notice about what the various criteria that we're looking for to put some more parameters around in the interest of consumers. And the very ability to do those rules and to tell the carrier the carriers what it is that we're looking for, and then to be straight up in terms of due process procedural requirements to make sure that those are adequate to be understood and wrapped around, and make sure that the carriers who want to play in the market understand what it is that they're trying to accomplish. And that very tool of being able to drive that value out of the market is incredibly important. Again, I'm going to come back to the $1 billion of savings that's in the governor's budget for the upcoming biennium that's driven largely by, somewhat different, but competitive bidding, profit caps for the carriers, what's the third one? Profit caps and growth caps. Those are the primary tools that generated the money within our budget that we can reallocate to higher priorities. And it's a good demonstration of the value of tools like this to be able to drive better value out of the marketplace. In the years before those tools came on the market, it's more akin to the Any Willing Plan model that is the alternative to some sort of smart purchasing. And again, our attempt in this, at the bill as introduced, and I'll just admit this right off, it was very, very loose in terms of the selection criteria. All it said was the board can select carriers and plans in the interest of consumers. That's way too broad, and I get that. And we had serious conversations with carriers and industry stakeholders trying to work around this and figure out what additional clarification we could add to make that target much more meaningful and attainable for them so that they could better understand it. And this tool where we promulgate rules, the board will promulgate rules by February 1st each year that will have the criteria that needs to be met and the measurement against which those criteria will be evaluated. That gives the industry the signals about what this board is looking for. And, hope and faith is that every single carrier in Minnesota will be able to meet those requirements and gain access to this valuable market for them. And they'll do it with products that are better than if we chose an Any Willing Health Plan model. So, that's what we're trying to get to. And we're working very hard to try to satisfy both those. This exchange needs to work for industry and for consumers. And when we don't have some of these tools, the Any Willing Plan model is what we saw prior to the competitive bidding, the profit caps, the growth caps. And it's pretty clear that those tools are incredibly valuable to the market when I look at it.
Senator Nelson, give it another shot.
Thank you, Madam Chair. the point that's different is that we now have these qualified health plans that, as you said, need to be the parameters defined both by the Department of Commerce and by the exchange, but yet you're not telling us what that looks like today, but you're asking us to approve it. And it seems to me that if the state, whether it be the Department of Commerce or this board, is charged with developing the criteria and the description of the QHP or the qualified health plans, why isn't that good enough? I mean, we're in the driver's seat here. We're defining what we think these QHPs should look like and what the criteria is. And so why is that not enough? Why can't we have that description? This is what we need. Include the cost containment pieces that you're talking about, but get those in I'm sure that the plans will figure out what it is that needs to be in those QHPs and present products accordingly. But I'm still trying to figure out why we can't have all that determined ahead of time, or at least say that plans that meet the qualified health plans criteria are in the plan. And you might want to take another stab at that, but maybe I'll just leave it that I didn't totally understand your answer. But maybe another way to look at that is I'm wondering if you can give me what's the difference between, I know there are differences, I just haven't seen them. I'd like to see a list of the differences between the federally required exchange. What's the criteria for that? And then I'd like to see a side-by-side comparison with what this is. And what are we doing differently than the federally required exchange?
Senator Lori, is that possible to organize and present in a written format to the members of this committee in the future?
I would think that the exchange staff could certainly put that together. I mean, I know we've seen much of that. I don't know if it's put together exactly in that format, but I'm certain that it can be accomplished, something like that. I can take one more stab at honestly why the language that is there. You know, we introduced, and I said in my opening statements, we introduced a very bare bones bill and have been adding clarification and improving the bill, honestly, at every single stop. And one of the, you know, really difficult conversations I've been having with carriers was around this, smart purchasing authority on behalf of the board. And one of the questions I put to them was, I understand that philosophically you don't agree with me that this is needed. I do think that it is needed. Let's get off the philosophical question. And if it's going to be there, how does it work best for you to have some certainty that your carriers are going to be willing to produce plans to put on the market? Because I want them to. Want that. If I could finish, that would be helpful. So I do want them to participate and to be on the market. And honestly, the rules by February with criteria and measurement and how the criteria will be measured is what they asked for years two and beyond. In year one, you know, we don't have time to put to go through a rulemaking process, and so I did take a stab at the six measures here and framed that as a work in progress. We may want to work with that a little bit and further refine it as we move forward. But in answer to your question about why it reads the way it reads is because this is what the plans brought to me, the carriers brought to me as, you know, a frame that gets them something so that they understand the target that they're shooting for. And so that is just an honest answer of how we got to this construction in the statute proposed.
Thank you. This is the final comment.
Yeah, just a comment, just to clarify. I just want to be very clear. Really, it's really kind of irrelevant whether I or anyone else thinks that health exchanges are needed, because quite frankly, it's the law of the land. It's been upheld by the Supreme Court. There's no doubt about that. But my goal is to make sure that Minnesota, which already has the best health care, arguably anywhere, high value, and a good accessibility, continues to have that. And that's why I want to know about why we are choosing, in Minnesota at least, to go with this active purchaser model. And maybe when I get the data from you about the difference between what a federally mandated exchange looks like and compare that to what this model looks like, maybe that will help ferret that out a little bit. But I want to be perfectly clear. I know this is here, and my job, I think our job, is to make sure that it is the best thing possible for Minnesotans, and that's why I'm asking these questions.
And it's very appreciated. They're good questions, and they need to be asked, and they need to be answered as best we can.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Are there any further questions? Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And tying back into the active purchaser model and some of the earlier testimony, from what I heard anyway, was that this particular model needed to be used because it would get us cost savings in some fashion. But you acknowledge, Senator, that we can't negotiate rates. Those are set by Commerce. So what that means then is that this board, and I've trouble with the structure of the board. I understand this isn't our purview here, but it does spill over into where I'm going. I have concern with a board that is appointed and confirmed, but isn't elected, and is also not accountable to anyone but themselves. And here's where this gets particularly concerning for me, because we're handing off a significant power to really four individuals, if they can get their votes together, that really belongs at a committee like this and in front of the entire legislature. If the exchange board is going to somehow derive savings They're going to have to get into, Senator Lori, you said this is health insurance reform, not health care reform. They're going to have to get into health care reform. That's where we're going to get savings. You can only demand certain profit levels and different things like that and get so much out of it. The comparisons that you've made with the governor's budget and $1 billion, although tangentially connected, to me is a completely different scenario because we as government are consumers. We are negotiating with those health plans to purchase their products. This board is almost really a regulatory environment. This board is not going to be consuming and purchasing and negotiating in that fashion. This board is only going to be able to really impose criteria. You don't meet these requirements, you don't get to play in the exchange. That is not a consumer-driven exchange, for lack of a better word. That's really more of a regulatory scheme. And this board, at least as I'm reading this and understand it, could put in specific criteria. Maybe there's a great new study that comes out that we could save 5% of healthcare if we did offered certain kinds of home visiting for follow-up on certain things. The board could establish that as one of the criteria where you have to, what you want to offer in the exchange has to do this. Now we're getting into healthcare reform by a board, well, really only four people if they get their votes together, who are unaccountable to anyone but themselves. And it's those kinds of things that create significant concern for me with an active purchaser model. If we had a different system where we would set baseline criteria and everyone that meets it gets in, then the market forces will come into play. There may be people that want to pay a little higher price for a little broader spectrum of services, and maybe it's not the most efficient and effective way, but that's what they want. Maybe Senator Benson wants that higher price product because her doctor is there. But if the exchange determines that the carrier who offers coverage for her specific doctor doesn't meet whatever specified criteria they come up with, then Senator Benson doesn't have that option. And I think that's a better environment than a panel of seven, only four of them having to agree, setting long-term, and I believe they will go there, long-term health care policy for the state of Minnesota and narrowing down the spectrum of options for the consumer. The gentleman that we had at the table here earlier, I think, laid it out fairly well, that if you put 500 options in front of an individual consumer, they're going to be overwhelmed. The arguments for the active purchaser is so that we can narrow all those options down for them so that they don't have to be overwhelmed. But I think that's a flawed approach because that's why we have a website where people can go in. That's why we have people that can assist you call on the phone. They can play the same role as this agent and narrow things down to give an understandable plate of options. But if they don't have those one or two or three or four or 500, I don't know what the number would be, but if they don't have all of these options to look at, they might not have the best fit for that individual consumer. But I think we do need to have that engagement in the process so that the single mom who just knows she has to go buy health insurance, if she needs it, does have that assistant. The elderly grandfather that doesn't want to deal with computers can pick up the phone and talk to somebody. So those are the kinds of concerns I have with the structure, with the active purchaser, because I see the board going those directions. And when they do, we don't have oversight. We can't hold them to account. Now, I suppose we could pass new laws and do kinds of, these other things, but we don't, with this bill, won't have the authority. We would have to somewhere down the road create that authority. And I guess I'll end this monologue with a question for you. Am I wrong in reading this and understanding that this board couldn't get down into healthcare policy and start requiring certain things because they ultimately probably would end up as a cost savings in those kinds of actions? Am I wrong in understanding that, or am I correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Nienau,
Senator Lurie.
A couple of points. You know, the ceding of legislative authority is one issue, and I don't think we really have. See, this is a creature of the legislature. We are creating it. We can always call it back. And you were beginning to get at some of that and make sure that it is running well. Folks saw the legislative auditor here earlier, Jim Nobles. He went home, I believe. But, you know, he's going to be doing thorough reviews. There is going to be auditing. I heard about that. There's feds require an independent audit. We're going to continue to do our job at overseeing this board, and that's a job that we all share and all take very seriously. In fact, some of the first round of rules are going to come out 30 days after we create this thing. We'll still be in session this year, and I fully anticipate being able to take a close look at what those look like, and we should, and we will. As far as the board actually doing true health policy, I don't believe that's within the purview that's laid out in this. If you look at page 9, paragraph D there,
Madam
it's
Chair.
In the interest of qualified individuals and employers that all of the active purchasing or selective purchasing is done. And the things that they may consider are affordability, quality and value of the health plans, promotion of initiatives to reduce health disparities, long-term cost containment, market stability, and meaningful choice and access. That's the list of the things that are, you know, at their disposal. Because, again, this is health insurance reform. This is not health care reform. We have a long way to go to get to the health care reform that I am committed to getting to as well. But no, I don't see this board as empowered to make health care decisions for our consumers. They're really going to be making sure that the products that are available on this new marketplace have the interests of the consumer.
Senator Rosen, Senator Benson wants to follow up on that, before
point,
we come to you, if that's okay, Senator Benson.
Senator Lurie, I would like to look at page 2, line number 33. The insurance marketplace created as a board to, and then if you go to lines 33 and 34, in the center of line 34, it says, following promote health improvement, care management, and reduction of health disparities. That's clearly health care policy. The board has that responsibility in this legislation, regardless of what criteria are given to the insurance providers who might be applying to be in the exchange.
Well, you know, Madam Chair,
Senator Lurie,
Senator Benson, these are broad, overarching goals and duties that we should be looking to see if the health insurance products are meeting these goals. I mean, certainly it's not a direct tool. And I don't envision it as such. I really don't see this board as engaging in those health discussions. But to the extent that the products help reach underserved populations and folks with health disparities, I think that they should try to use those tools to do those efforts. That's what these duties are speaking to. They're broad. When you get down into, you know, how can they select for participation, we limited that more than what we're asking the board to try to accomplish. And they're not going to have perfect tools for everything that we're asking them to accomplish, but they'll send reports back to the legislature annually saying how they're meeting their goals, their broad goals. We can take a look at it again in future sessions and figure out whether we have the right balance of tools.
Thank you, Senator Lurie. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Lurie, there is a you talk about oversight, and I am concerned about the board's oversight, as you can tell. I think many of us do have some concerns. So I would ask if you could accept an oral amendment to page 3, line 12, where it says the Minnesota insurance marketplace is subject to review by the legislative auditor. This is one simple change to say it must be reviewed by the auditor, not a is subject to review, because normally how that works, we all have to vote on it before it becomes you know, one of the subjects. So if we could make that something that we need to do.
Madam Chair.
Senator Lurie.
Senator Rosen. You know, we'd be adding fiscal costs to this bill if we were to do that. I was handed a letter outlining some of what the OLA does, regardless of whether it's one of the topics that we select or not. They still do a lot of oversight, and they're empowered to do broad investigative actions and like examining allegations of misuse of state money or other resources, examine allegations of a conflict of interest related to marketplace board or employee. They can use their subpoena power. They do all of these audits and many of these audits and investigations separate from the evaluations that the legislature specifically asks for. So there's a whole body of audit and investigation that goes on separate from the specific evaluations that are question specifics to dive a lot deeper. And so if we put in here that they're just going to take that deeper dive without ever spelling out exactly what questions we're trying to tease out, I'm worried about the fiscal implications of it. The OLA will be doing ongoing audits and investigations, and we will have significant other oversight of the board. So there's quite a bit of oversight, and I guess I'd like to get some advice from the legislative auditor about what that change would mean in terms of fiscal implications before I agreed to accept it. But I mean, I understand. I want oversight too. I want thorough oversight. I think that we have
a lot of it
in the bill already.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair. Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen, sorry.
On that point, please.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Jen. Senator Lurie, obviously this is just a simple change. We've already spent, $165 million of federal grants to build this. We're going to be taking about $62 million in on a gross premium tax. I don't think the OLA report costs a tremendous amount of money. It's something that I think we need to look at to create some comfort level for some members that there is enough oversight on this board that and to see where this exchange is going and if it's – because obviously is it going to be, you know, all the questions all, you know, above that we've been talking about? So if you're not comfortable taking the change now, I think this is an ongoing discussion that we need to take and be sincere about it, because we need to have a little more comfort, especially since the exchange task force has recommended a larger task force and one that has is comprised of people with a lot more experience and no conflict of interest. So we're trying to make sure that there is some comfort in this exchange.
Senator Rosen, could you read the amendment again? I am thinking hard, and it will be a matter of further conversation at a minimum.
Madam Chair, I
think I could have Ms. White read what we've heard the proposed amendment would be, although I'm not certain you are pursuing it at this time, Senator Rosen.
Well, I'm going to rethink my initial response, Madam Chair.
While you're thinking, Senator Marty wants to have something to say here, and then we will listen to the language.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, I think you're right. The auditor should have review over it. I think this language already covers that. When the legislature votes on their project, says for the program evaluation, where we ask them to investigate an existing program. And I agree with you that if you want to do that, in effect, we'd be saying the Legislative Audit Commission, instead of picking five programs a year, we're picking this one. I don't know if you're intending it every year, but I think what you want, I think what the bill should want, is for the legislative auditor have authority to audit it under its regular process, to check the books and report back to us with concerns. I think this language already does it. Maybe it could beef it up, but I don't think you have to worry that for the legislative auditor to have review would be a legislative vote, because that's simply which investigations we want to do, because we have concerns about whether a program could be done in a different way. In other words, I agree with you, the auditor ought to do it. I think this language already gives them that authority.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Marty. I is subject to review. I think the comfort level would come if it was said must. I do not want to have it voted on by the legislature. I think at some point we have to figure out what is going to be the check and balance of this exchange. And if the OLA is just one part of that, I think it's a reasonable request.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, I'm with you. I think we should. I'd like to, but I want to hear the actual amendment again, if I could.
Are you offering the amendment, or are you asking for further discussion?
I'm asking for some advice from the council, please.
Madam Chair and members, on page 3, line 11, delete is. And on page 3, line 12, delete subject to review and insert must be reviewed. So the sentence would read, the Minnesota insurance marketplace must be reviewed by the legislative auditor under section 3.971.
And Madam Chair?
Senator Benson.
If Senator Rosen would entertain a friendly amendment to her amendment, the insertion of the word biennial between reviewed and by. And let me speak to why I would choose biennial. An annual review might create too much work for Mr. Nobles, but I'd like a placeholder in here that it's not quadrennially. I think annually might be too aggressive. And again, Senator Marty will be doing more work on this as we go forward. We'll get Mr. Nobles in here, but we need a placeholder.
Senator Lori?
I mean, I'm comfortable with just must be reviewed, and we'll have further conversations about it. I mean, I take Madam Chair, Senator Benson, Senator Rosen, we really want very thorough oversight. We want everything coming back to the legislature so that we understand what's happening. These are big changes to a large segment of our economy, changes that make a difference in people's lives, our families, and our businesses, and I know that. So we do want that oversight, and so let's just leave it at must be reviewed, get some feedback from the OLA, see where it should be, have it a good open conversation. I would take this as a friendly amendment.
And let's have the amendment language read again.
Madam Chair,
Senator Benson.
I'll withdraw my comment.
Thank you.
To Senator Rosen's amendment.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
I'm just a little conflicted why we cannot have it biennial, Senator Lori. Madam Chair, it's just I understand, and I know you're completely sincere about trying to make this the best bill, and we are trying to change it and make it a good bill. So I think Senator Benson's friendly amendment is acceptable, and so I'd like to change my motion to the changing line page 3, line 11, striking is subject to review, and inserting must be reviewed biennially by the legislative auditor under section 3.971.
Is everyone aware of what the motion is in front of you by Senator Rosen? Is there any further discussion? Senator Lori.
There actually is a little bit of further discussion because it seems to indicate that every other year the legislative auditor wouldn't have the general powers under 3.971, which are those audits and investigations as separate from the evaluations. And we do want that to occur every single year, the OLA to be looking at it every single year. We don't want that more in-depth one every single year, but we don't want it to imply that they only really look at anything every other year. So, I mean,
Madam Chair?
Yes. I'm just trying to figure out how we can everyone seems to be in agreement there needs to be some language here in relationship to oversight of the finance issues of this committee. So since we are going to be going to committees that will be dealing with this, I think there's opportunity for this language to be, rather than simply pressing forward with language, that you need more time to think through that. I'm not sure that we really want to take an action on this amendment now, as long as the commitment is there that you'll continue to have this conversation and create language in the upcoming Finance Committee.
Madam Chair, Senator Lurie, did the Exchange Task Force deal with this as far as oversight, and what was their recommendations?
There was a strong recommendation from the task force that it be subject to the OLA, basically what we have in here.
Mm-hmm. Are you in agreement with that, that this we won't let this go, that this will have some further discussion,
Chair,
further clarification?
Senator Rosen, I will work with you and Senator Benson and make sure that the OLA does incredibly thorough work. I can share the letter that he just gave me this afternoon just with a highlight of what the OLA does, even shy of the in-depth evaluations that we request, what, 3 or 4 a year? Anyway, you have my commitment to work with you to make sure that this level of oversight is the proper level.
Madam Chair, I remove my
amendment. Okay, thank you. Is there any further discussion? Senator Benson.
Madam Chair, thank you. We kind of breached the board question, and there are a lot of things I disagree with, but I'm looking at some protection for the legislative bodies and the governor. Under removal, page 5, line 6, and perhaps we need council advice on this, but right now it says a board member may be removed only for cause following notice and hearing by 2/3 vote of the board. What happens if the board doesn't remove someone that the legislature and the governor, I am not familiar with how boards operate, and so what if someone is way off the path that doesn't, the board doesn't remove them, can the legislature and the governor do anything to undo the direction of the board?
If a board member is way off path and the rest of the board does not work to, I don't know. Let me.
Madam Chair.
Senator Eaton.
Since they're appointed by the governor, can't he withdraw his appointment?
But,
no?
Madam Chair, they're confirmed by the Senate, and if the governor could just remove someone confirmed by the Senate, then it undoes our authority. And so I don't know. This board has very broad authorities, and I am not sure. We're dealing with some of the legislative auditor issues. There are still big questions about the conflict of interest, but at the very least, I would think as legislators, we could all work on this together. How do we protect our interest? Because if this goes poorly, it will be on all of us.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Senator Rosen.
Madam Chair, and to that point, Senator Benson's point, Senator Lurie, perhaps the exchange could also get a list of what the boards, I know there's a list of what they're required to do or responsibilities, but really a detailed list of what is going on there, along with Senator Nelson's list of federal requirements versus the state requirements. I think that would clarify, and maybe because we do have to have these issues tightened down in this bill, and I think that's a very, very good point that she brings up.
Madam Chair, Senator Benson, Senator Rosen, to Senator Benson's point first, I mean, one of the things in the governance work group that was discussed over and over and over again as a really core function is that this board actually does need some stability aside from the political process so that the swings that we see in our political environment aren't able to affect major swings overnight on this board as well. And so that's one of the reasons why you don't see the ability to come in. I mean, they're 4-year terms. They will come up again. The board, should be cleaning its own house and making sure. If they're not, we will need to come back to it and revisit it. But making sure that this board does have the insulation from our political processes so that in our changing political environments, you can't just pull the rug out from under it. That would create too much instability for consumers across the state and would be really an unworkable situation. To Senator Rosen's point, I talked too long and lost it. What,
I can't remember either.
There was a good one, too, and it had a good answer.
Madam Chair, it was the
Senator Rosen?
The list of requirements and responsibilities of the board, very detailed list would be very, very helpful.
The Madam Senator Chair, Lurie. Senator Rosen, actually just late last week, we got our fiscal note as on the bill as drafted, and, you know, it's changed some since then. I mean, you know, members who go and read it understand the broker compensation piece, which was a big piece of the financing in there, has been completely changed and really zeroed out and moved to a status quo. But other than that, there's a tremendous amount of detail in 46 pages worth of riveting reading. But it really does help really flesh out exactly what functions this board is going to be doing. If members want that, and if there's specific things, you know, most of it is in there. It's a phenomenal resource for members who want to dig behind it and see what the nuts and bolts of the thing look like. It does take several hours to go through, but it in all seriousness, it is worth the read. It's pretty insightful.
Thank you, Senator Lurie. I think that Senator Benson has another question. I just want to remind the committee that we need to make sure that we're having a conversation about those things that are of primary jurisdiction in our committee.
Thank you. And Madam Senator Chair, Benson. I know this is outside our jurisdiction, but I'm going to ask Senator Rosen, perhaps, what is the removal process for the PUC? And is there one, and could we look to that as a model? I am not familiar enough. I thought perhaps you would know off the top of your head. I'm sorry, I really put you on the spot. But there must be a provision, and I will come prepared the next time we meet with an amendment, because I am not going to give up my legislative authority to a board without without some fight.
Yeah. Senator
Chair
Hayden, Senator
Benson,
Lurie, is outside of this, and we can go on for a long time about things that we may or may not disagree about. I'd like some motions us to discuss rather than circling the same conversation over and over. Senator Hayden,
no,
like
thank
to
you,
move
Madam
this
Chair.
Forward.
I was just going to say the same thing, that I think that we are starting to get a little far off of what you had outlined at the beginning of the day is the things that we need to look for in this particular committee. But I will say that we have a lot of boards. We have a lot of commissions that are set up, though this will be a significant one. But I think that there are processes behind where we've kind of given up I wouldn't say it that way, but that we've granted powers to other citizens and other professionals to kind of go out and help us manage the state. So this wouldn't be the first time that we've done something that way. I think that if there is a reason, because we think the magnitude of what we're doing here, that we need more protections, I think it'd be more appropriate for us to do that. Either we should have done it in state government operations when I first saw the bill, or I think there would be other opportunities. But I am concerned, Madam Chair, that we could go through this whole bill and nitpick every part of it except for the stuff that we are tasked to do tonight.
But Madam Chair,
Senator Rosen.
To that point, for many of us, this is the first time we've heard that bill or this bill, and we are not offering amendments outside of this jurisdiction. I think this is a total package, and sometimes we have to look at it as a total package. So I know that I respect your opinion, and you too, Senator Hayden, but we'd be here till midnight if we went through all the questions that we had. But we do have some significant questions that need to be addressed pertaining to this bill and how it's going to move forward, because it is one package. So there are no amendments that are going to be outside of the policy.
And we're going to limit our discussion to as best we can to the areas of this committee, because all of you, the questions especially related to finance or oversight of the finance, have opportunity because you serve on committees that this bill will be coming to in the future. So this isn't the only opportunity, and it certainly isn't the first time it may be the first time in front of this committee, but it certainly isn't the first time that we've all engaged in informational hearings about this bill and elements of this bill. So we need to do the work of this committee, and I'm really encouraging you to honor my request to stay focused on that. Senator Nino.
Just to comment, Madam Chair, this conversation, I know it's strayed a little bit off the purview of this committee, but it goes back to my comments earlier, which clearly fall under this committee, which is healthcare policy. And I think the bill clearly has language that opens this board up to go down that direction. Senator Lori, you disagree. But this simply highlights the concern there that if you think they don't have that authority and they go there, they're untouchable because they're accountable to no one but themselves.
Thank you, Senator Nino. Is there any further discussion or any other amendments? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Lori, did you talk about the federal requirements and the federal information coming down, and when are we to see those regulations coming out of the feds so we can put that in statute and maybe tighten this up a little bit about our minimum? It's on page 8, line 29. The board may establish minimum certification requirements for health carriers and health plans to be offered through the marketplace. And so, what can you please just give us a rundown of what you know and when you expect those? And can we get tighten this language up so it makes reference to what we need to have?
Well, minimum certification requirements, I believe, already exist. For plan certification, it's marketing criteria, network adequacy requirements, accreditation, disclosure of information, implementation of a quality improvement strategy, utilization of a standard format for comparing plans and options, utilization of a uniform enrollment form and process, health plan offering of at least one silver and one gold plan, multi-state plans within 4 years, potentially different rules there, and that plans may start filing at the end of March and must file by mid-May to participate in the October 1, 2013 enrollment. That's really the basic exchange components for plan certification that already exist. What this subdivision 5 here for health carrier and plan requirements for participation is getting at is the adverse selection and market rules issue that I started to describe earlier. Adverse selection is something that we all need to be incredibly vigilant to prevent from occurring in the marketplace, where expensive high-cost cases get steered to the market and blow up the premiums and the rates inside the market, and low-cost, healthier individuals get selected for participation outside the market. That's not going to work. That's a recipe for failure. There's a couple of different routes to go. The adverse selection work group on the task force submitted a strong recommendation that we adopt same rules inside and outside the market for individual plans and for group plans. And the health the broader task force adopted that amendment as well with similarly strong language. We haven't been able to really nail down the exact language about what same inside and outside would look like. And it's not a done deal that the legislature will create same rules inside and outside. If we do, that addresses the adverse selection risks that we're worried about. If the legislature does not adopt market rules that are the same inside and outside the exchange, that's what that initial paragraph on that begins on page 8, line 28, says. The alternative tool, if we don't choose to take the task force's recommendation, then at a minimum, the board is going to need to establish minimum certification requirements for carriers and plans in order to use a less effective tool to combat adverse selection risks. And so that's really a core piece, and it's crafted in a way that is maybe awkward to read, but if you do read it, it does give the guideposts about what we're talking about. So if the legislature does nothing on market rules, the exchange is going to need to be able to set certification requirements. If the legislature sets certification requirements, same rules inside and outside, the exchange board itself is stripped of that power to set the certification requirements, and that's what this, you know, admittedly somewhat awkward language steps us through. But that's what's behind it and why it reads in the way that it does. And again, I've been approached, you know, at least a dozen times by different groups trying to get market rules into this bill. And it is a very big conversation that we need to get going very soon. And it does have tremendous impacts. But the way this bill is crafted, it meets the federal blueprint that we submitted. And we're going to start that market rules conversation as soon as possible. And again, you know, the task force, I voted for it. I think it was just about unanimous that same inside and outside is a really important aspect. I'm not saying that everybody across the state agrees with that. We are going to have that conversation. If we get there, then this first paragraph is null in the way that this is structured.
So Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen. And
Senator Lurie, so you don't think that we need to put this in statute, the requirements, the list of the requirements, tighten this paragraph up a little bit?
No, I don't think so, because we cite it. This list of requirements is found in 1311C1 of the Act, and so we just cited it. So anybody, you can cross-reference it. That was for ease of reading guideposts within here. If you want to know what this minimum certification requirements are, you can just type that in and look it up rather than us trying to spell it out in the statute.
Senator Nelson and then Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Lurie, actually, this gets to my next question. The minimum certifications requirements, is that the same as the federally mandated exchange?
The federally mandated exchange would meet the minimum certification requirements. Yes, Madam Chair.
Senator Nelson, follow
up. Thank you. So then my follow-up would be, so, and you mentioned multi-state plans in the future. And so I'm thinking about, again, this difference between, and I don't know what the difference is yet, but I will after you provide that data. But I'm wondering about the potential conflicts if Minnesota has a certain exchange that is different than the federal exchange, and maybe some other states that we might want to have multi-state plans with, maybe they have the federal exchange, or maybe they have the federal exchange, maybe they have their own state exchange. And so the question would be, would we not be better off, or what are your thoughts on maybe having that federal exchange, or having something that maybe the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, you know, so there's some uniformity between the states? Because just looking ahead, I can see a little bit of a disconnect if each state has its own type of exchange. And I'm sure there's been some discussion on that. I just haven't been part of that.
Senator Lurie.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, I think that, you know, you're from Rochester. You know Minnesota is
the
historic leader in healthcare. I mean, the concept of allowing a federal one-size-fits-all exchange in Minnesota is just contrary to who we are as a people. I believe, as almost every, you know, the chamber, the carriers, the plans, the provider network, hospitals, doctors, almost the entire healthcare industry and consumers are united that we need a Minnesota-based approach and not just cede to the federal exchange. You know, one of the things that'll come out, you know, as we tease this out is, you know, the federal exchange, it won't be able to utilize the tools that we have here. I hope that we're able to get to a Minnesota-based risk adjustment model sooner rather than later. I hope that we're able to use, you know, Minnesota's tools for quality comparisons of providers and of plans. We have some really sophisticated tools in that regard, and it would be a shame for us to just leave those tools on the table and let the feds implement a one-size-fits-all option. That is more expensive than the option that we're providing. I mean, I know one of the things I keep seeing is that let the feds do it and let them pay for it. They don't. They make us pay for the federal exchange at a 3.5% withhold that isn't slated to go down. Ours is expected to go down in year two and in year three go down further as we pick up participation. So we are going to be able to run better and cheaper and more efficiently in a Minnesota-based model than the federal exchange would produce for us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to clarify. I do believe Minnesota has the very best health care, the very best value, and the very best assessment. I just said that like, you know, half hour ago. So I definitely believe that. And I guess I'm just questioning, I'm still back on that active purchaser piece, and is that really going to allow us to keep that very high quality, highly accessible, good value health care? So my comments earlier about a multi-state plan, I want to be perfectly clear. I'm not interested in having Minnesota healthcare be anything other than the best, and we already are national leaders. But I am still concerned about that active purchaser piece.
Senator Benson.
And Madam Chair and Senator Loring, now we've opened another can of worms, and that's the federal issues, the essential benefits set, Minnesota Care vis-a-vis the basic health plan, and MSHA. So I do want to get to all of them, but I'm going to start with MSHA. It's my understanding that the MSHA board recommended a three-year phase-out, and we're looking at, I'm sorry, it changed its position in
it's
the bill.
It's at the very last page, second to the last page.
Second to the last page on this version, that it would be almost immediately phased out, and I know it's quite expensive for us to comply with the federal law and to keep the MSHA pool. I'm wondering if you could fill in some details around that and help me understand why we are moving so abruptly when the board suggested a three-year phase-out, and what does that do to premiums?
Well, thank you, Senator Lori.
Madam Chair, Senator Benson, this is a really difficult issue, and I agree and was really anticipating a 3 to 5 year phase-out as well. Unfortunately, what happened at the feds is that issued guidance. It's not a final rule, but it's guidance regarding the reinsurance. Everybody, you know, we have to pay reinsurance monies out of our premiums that will be for our reinsurance pools, and everybody assumed that those pools would be segregated by state for a very long time, and that was the time that was what was assumed when MSHA crafted proposed the three-year phase out. Federal guidance came out that indicated that the feds are leaning towards a very different model that nobody really expected, where the reinsurance pool is aggregated on a national level, and states are only accessible for models that meet the federal requirements for access to that pool. MSHA does not meet that model for access to that proposed national reinsurance pool. That was a big problem. We're upset about that. We're working with our federal colleagues to try to change that. If we're successful in doing so, and we can segregate Minnesota's reinsurance pools and allow that to be used to continue to fund MSHA operations, a three-year phase-out would be much better for the 6,000 enrollees of MSHA. I know that. Everybody knows that. There's about $60 million at stake here. And if MSHA, in the way it's structured, cannot gain access to this state, this national reinsurance pool and draw down that $60 million, we need to put our thinking caps on and trying to figure out what we can do to really make the transition smooth for this population. Maybe we do need to still do the phase out, and that's what's in this bill, is that the Commissioner of Commerce will work with the MSHA board and come up with the very best plan. At a very minimum, you know, it is my anticipation that we would put tremendous resources into facilitating the smoothest transition possible for these individuals. There would be guaranteed issue, so they, you know, would be able to find a product. But they, they're going to be very nervous about changing. And I hope that we don't have to cross that threshold. I hope that the final regs that come out, the feds have listened to us and agreed to go to either a state segregated pool or a national pool where our MCHA model would meet the requirements and we can get around this. So this gives Commerce and the MCHA board working collaboratively the authority to approach that in the best possible way to reduce market disruption and still, you know, maximize the receipt of federal funds.
And Senator Benson.
Madam Chair and Senator Lori, this is my frustration. The things that are precious and good about Minnesota's healthcare system, the feds get control. And you and I talked, I don't know if it was last year, Minnesota has a good healthcare system, and one of the reasons I opposed the ACA was so that we in this body, listening to our constituents, could make this policy. And this is part of the problem. We are losing control of something where we should be protecting the sickest 26,000 Minnesotans. And it seems to me right now there is no plan from the feds to map over the benefits that we have into the federal pool. And so we are moving forward with a great deal of uncertainty for a very vulnerable population. When are the feds going to get us some of these answers? Because we have to have this done by March 22nd, and they have no accountability. If they don't answer this question for us, we have no recourse. We simply must do what we're told. And I'm very, very frustrated. And I know this issue, you and I are probably in very close agreement that we should stay in control of this. And so please can... I have been working with Commissioner Jessen, and I've been happy to do that. But we have to do everything they tell us, and they have to give us nothing in return. And so please help me understand how we're going to do this right when they stay in control.
Madam Chair.
Do you want to respond to that, Senator Lori?
Senator Benson, I guess all I can do is ask what you'd like me to change here. I mean, there's little I can do. We can, these are federal laws. They're the law of the land. They were upheld. You know, the president was reelected. This is the world we find ourselves living in and trying to work around. Now, MCHA, the MCHA board itself is, understands that this language is what it needs to be. They too would really like to see the 3-year phase out, as we all would. We're going to be working hard with our federal colleagues, and I don't have an answer about exactly when they will have the final reg out on that. I wish I did.
Senator Benson.
And Madam Chair and Senator Lori, this brings us to the whole timeline issue. We're doing a 4-year IT project in 18 months. We are moving 1.2 million Minnesotans on October 1st. I understand the federal exchange has been given some relief language in that they won't have to meet the targets they're expecting us to meet. And so I'm going to ask you, as the author of this bill, perhaps Commissioner Showalter, if we can have a grace period. We're the A student who's never had a car accident. We're asking for 30 minutes past curfew so that we can do this right. I don't want this to fail. I don't want October 1st to come and our IT system collapse in on itself, and then December 31st come and the MCHA pool has to be migrated over and the feds have given us no answer and now it's costing our insurance companies more. Much as I disagree with the path we're on, I will do my dead level best to make it better, but I don't think going this fast is going to get us success. And so I will offer support in asking for an extended timeline, and I know the response will be, well, then we have to move into the federal exchange. Well, if the federal exchange doesn't have to meet their own timelines, can we just take a breath and do this in a more stepwise manner?
Okay. Well, if you want to place that in motion, then we can take an action rather than continuing to converse. I will have to say that we could have been working on this for a very long time, but resisted working on the development of this. So just keep that in mind. We're talking about feeling pressured at this point. You have somebody here that you want to introduce, Senator Lurie?
Peter Bercody with the Department of Commerce was going to speak to.
Madam Chair, Peter Brickwoody, Director of Government Affairs for the Department of Commerce. Senator Benson, to the language in the bill related to MSHA, as you've mentioned, MSHA is the state's high-risk pool, 26,000 approximately folks in MSHA right now. The language in the bill would not does not presuppose the date of when MSHA will unwind. The language in the bill, what it does is indicates that the commissioner of the Department of Commerce will retain the authority to eventually terminate MSHA. The reason why that is in the bill is that the reason for MSHA's existence is going away under the ACA with the advent of guaranteed issue. The reason why MSHA exists is the state of Minnesota created MSHA as an insurer of last resort, essentially, for individuals who were high risk who could not purchase, for whatever reason, insurance on the private market. So I believe, Senator, that you're concerned about the state retaining ultimate control over where and how MSHA, which is a program that has worked very well, unwinds. Certainly, it would be it in 3 years, be it 5 years, or less, if the consensus is that we should do it that way, that decision would ultimately still reside with the state.
And, Madam Chair, I've
been... Yes, Senator Lurie.
I've been given additional information that the reinsurance rules are expected toward the end of March, so hopefully we will have some certainty by the time we pass this, if not by the time we pass this, at least by the end of session, and we can, you know, re-look at it.
Madam Chair, I have a question.
Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam. And I believe what you said is absolutely correct, although to me it smacks kind of like the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. The states had all the right in the world to keep it at 70 or 75 miles an hour. We just didn't get money if we didn't go down to 55 miles an hour until that federal law was repealed a number of years ago. Is it a similar situation here where we could absolutely continue to run MSHA as we currently are right now, but if we do, it's completely paid for by the state, whereas if we follow the federal requirements, then we get that federal money to go with it. Is my understanding of the circumstance correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Nienau, MSHA is funded through member assessments, and so the state is not necessarily paying for it directly. I understand your point, however. The reason for MSHA's existence was the state had decided, I made the public policy decision to provide an insurer of last resort for individuals who could not purchase insurance on the private market. With the advent of guaranteed issue, that situation will no longer occur. And so the reason for its existence no longer exists. And frankly, it appears that the ACA is moving in more in a model of which Minnesota had led the way in creating a pool, a high-risk pool, where these individuals could purchase coverage or have coverage when they could not purchase it for themselves on the private market.
Thank you. Mr. Brickbody, is that what it was? Peter Brickbody?
Yeah, Brickbody. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kind of an interesting comment that got me thinking is that it has been implied that if we had taken care of this the last 2 years, we wouldn't be in this situation. And I actually was the author of this bill in 08, and there was tremendous pressure to get it right, and it wasn't right, so the governor pulled it. But there was, Senator Lurie, you did have a bill last year, correctly, and that was based off of the work group's recommendations, I would assume. Could you please explain how different this bill is to what your bill was last year and why we aren't following many of the recommendations that came out? And I can point to a few more, but I would like to for you to, and I know everybody's getting tired, Senator Lurie, you look tired, but this is a very important point because this is a bill that's a lot different than what was proposed last year. And, of course, politics and the dynamics of this place. But so we're trying to get our hands around, you know, what's in front of us right now.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, I was the author of a bill last year that that did receive a hearing in the Health Committee, you know, after deadlines once, and we had a good discussion about it. This bill follows that bill in many regards. There are a couple of areas where it doesn't, largely in regards to the governance of it. And I guess, you know, I'd go to the, you know, I worked on the governance work group with under the, you know, the Insurance Exchange Task Force had several work groups that dug deep into specific issues that needed to be addressed. And I worked hard on the governance work group. We were a very active group and forwarded recommendations to the broader task force. And that's the area where last year's bill and this year's bill probably differ greatly. Not greatly, but the most. Work group actually did recommend a smaller, more nimble board, and the broader work for the broader task force grew the size of the board significantly, and did have a recommendation that, in the context of that larger board, that there be a small minority that had that were allowed to have a conflict of interest, but that had a recusal policy. And truthfully, I think that with this smaller, more nimble board that's a little bit more in line with the work group's recommendation, it's through the whole way you're trying to balance a whole set of needs: nimbleness and responsiveness, and still the whole host of accountability and transparency that comes with running of public systems. And I believe that last year's bill was a bill that, in the context of the last 2 years, was a good bill and could have found some decent compromise. I believe this year's bill still has a good balance of those core principles and is more fitting with the current context in which we're operating. And still, both have due respect for the important work done by the task force.
Thank you. Are there any further amendments?
I have a question.
Just another question. Senator Nienau?
And this kind of ties, I think I know what the answer is, but this kind of ties back to some of the concerns we've had with the federal government. And to me, it seems more and more clear that even though it's a Minnesota-based exchange, it's not quite so much a Minnesota-run exchange, because we have to, it's kind of like Henry Ford. You can have any color Model T you want as long as it's black. We have certain parameters that we have to fall within. But what is the essential health benefits package? What do we know what that's going to look like if we don't win?
Madam Chair.
Senator Lurie.
Senator Nienau, we would have been required to take action last year to select our essential health benefit set. No action was taken, and so we wound up with the default plan, which I believe was the small group plan with the second largest enrollment across the state, which is a health partners plan that is available. I can forward it to members if they wish to look at what that essential health benefit set for the state of Minnesota looks like. It was, we fell to the default model for lack of action last year.
Senator Benson.
Madam Chair and Senator Lurie, actually we didn't fall to the default for lack of action. The four options that the federal government gave us, we could have taken the federal employees plan, which provided a smaller essential benefit set than any of the other three options. And the other three options were so similar that it made no difference which one we chose. And so there was no reason to take action, because the default was one of the three in which there was no discernible difference in the essential benefit set. Unfortunately, the federal government still hasn't confirmed that those are valid essential benefits, even though they met all 10 of the criteria that were laid out by Secretary Sebelius. And so, again, we see a delay because we're deferring to... I honestly believed when we defaulted to that essential benefit set, the decision was done, but it got swooped back to Washington, and now we wait again for permission to move forward.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, the question is on the motion of Senator Lurie's Senate File 1 as amended and is recommended to pass.
And I would
and referred.
I would request a roll call.
Yeah, and a roll call is requested. The bill is recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Taxes. Is that correct, Senator Lurie?
Yes.
And with that, without any further discussion, we will take the roll.
All right, Senator Benson?
No.
Senator Eaton?
Yes.
Senator Hayden?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Senator Lurie?
Yes.
Senator Marty?
Yes.
Senator Nelson?
No.
Senator Nenow?
No.
Senator Rosen?
No.
Senator Sharon?
Yes.
Senator Wicklund?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yep.
Six votes yes and seven votes?
Yeah.
Seven votes yes, seven votes yes, and four no, the motion passes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
With no, this was referred, that was in the motion that it was referred to taxes. Yes. And with no further business before us, the meeting shall adjourn. Thank you.